Welcome to Panelcast, Forbidden Panels podcast featuring comic books, video games, and movie news and reviews. And now, your host, AJ Herrera.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to episode 160 of the Panelcast. I am your host, AJ, and with me, as always, is Anthony.
Hey, everybody. I'm back again. And this time around, AJ and I will be reviewing Kingsglaive, Final Fantasy XV. We had a chance to check it out, and we want to let you all know what we thought about it. Our opinions, our feelings, and whatnot. Apart from that, we've got our regular news for you, as well as some goings-on within the comic world and some informational tidbits about FP.
All that and more after we take our first break.
Hi everyone, Robert here at QBC Toys and More, inviting you to visit our store in Victorville. We are the premier comic, toy, and collectible store in the High Desert. Sign up for our comic pull list service and never miss an issue again. Like us on Facebook to stay up to date on sales, promotions, and events. Mention this podcast in the store to receive 10% off your total purchase. QBC Toys and More. Yes, we have candy too. Located on Hesperia Road, next to the Tri-City Car Wash.
Welcome back, everybody. So this is our news segment. So why don't we go ahead and shoot it over to Anthony for our first segment.
All right, everybody. First little tidbit I've got for you is related to the DC Cinematic Universe. Talking with the Wall Street Journal, Geoff Johns talked about the direction, the feel, a little bit of what we can expect going forward for the DC film universe. And he's quoted as saying, mistakenly in the past, I think the studio said, oh, DC films are gritty and dark, and that's what makes them different. That couldn't be more wrong. It's a hopeful and optimistic view of life. Even Batman has a glimmer of that in him. If he didn't think he'd make tomorrow better, he'd stop. We're trying to take a really hard look at everything to make sure we stay true to the characters and tell stories that celebrate them. Now, looking back over the last few DC films, this is a really different view. And he also, you know, part of what he said later in that interview relates to the lighter tone going forward. Some of it, it's starting with the Justice League, that feeling of hope that's supposed to be there that we all expect from this particular group of characters. And he said after the reception of Batman vs. Superman, they made some story tweaks for Justice League to accelerate getting to that hope and optimism a little faster in the film. Now, that's going to change basically the overall feel of DC films going forward, because everything to this point has played on that darkness for one reason or another. But, I mean, he's absolutely right. If they didn't have that hope, if they didn't see that light at the end of the tunnel, I don't think any of these heroes would do what they do.
Meh.
Meh?
Meh.
Well, I don't, until we see the next film out of this stock, we won't actually know what comes of it. But it might lighten the feel. I don't know if that'll improve things or it'll make it worse. We'll just have to wait and see. What have you got?
Well, Fox has handed out a pilot production commitment to Black Lightning. That's right, you have to say it just like that. The black superhero drama from prolific superhero series producer Greg Berlanti. The story will center on Jefferson Pierce, who hung up his suit and his secret identity years ago. However, with a daughter hell-bent on justice and a star student being recruited by a local gang, he'll be pulled back into the fight as the wanted vigilante Black Lightning. Salim and Mara Brock Akil will write and executive produce the project with Berlanti and Sarah Schrechter. Akil Productions and Berlanti Productions will produce in association with Warner Brothers TV. Now, this is in direct opposition of Marvel's Luke Cage, because this is the first African-American DC Inspired title to be out there. Personally, while Black Lightning is kind of cool, I think they're doing enough with electricity in the DC Universe with the Flash and Black Adam coming out soon, as well as Shazam. So I'm not really excited to see this. I really wasn't a big fan of him growing up, but if they decided to change it and bring out Static Shock, I'm all for it. Even though Black Lightning ends up being his father or uncle or something in the DC Comics, we may end up seeing Static Shock on TV, but I'd rather have a live-action Static Shock as opposed to Black Lightning. It feels like they're just trying to keep up with Marvel again instead of worried about something that actually be quality and well worth it story-wise. So,
and I kind of have to agree with you on that one. Black Lightning isn't even one of those characters that I'm all that familiar with, but Static Shock, I know pretty well.
And not to mention, I mean, the character came out at a time where, sure, we have Green Arrow and, you know, we have the Green Lantern, but the only reason he's called Black Lightning is because he's black. And there's a lot of characters like that that come from that time and era where they were just called Black something or other. You know, Black Manta, Black Lightning, Blackula, you know, like, so to have this character come out now, it just seems like you really want to push the racist angle. And I can see a lot of problems coming with it, but we shall see. Anthony?
Okay, back to DC Film Universe for me. And this one is, well, it's cool news to me. True Blood and Magic Mike XXL star Joe Manganiello is going to be portraying Deathstroke in the upcoming Ben Affleck-directed Batman solo film.
Did you have to mention Magic Mike?
Yes, I did. Yes, I did, because we do actually have female fans. Well, actually, True Blood catered to them anyway, didn't it?
Yes.
I guess I didn't have to mention that.
No, you didn't.
I'm very sorry. Upside, I never had to sit through it. So, getting away from that, but...
And you lost your train of thought. You lose.
I don't have a train, but Justice League is currently shooting in London right now, and people are wondering if Deathstroke's going to be making a cameo, because Ben Affleck recently posted video of the star in his costume, and, well, he's in London shooting Justice League, so, you know. But Deathstroke's always been one of those villains for me that's just fantastic, and granted, they've done some really strange things to him over the years as far as his backstory and his power set and what he's capable of and all of that. But he's always just been fun. Utterly mercenary and downright ruthless. So, you know, I've never made any claims that I was a huge Ben Affleck fan. But he has done some decent directing work. So we'll see what happens with Affleck as Batman with Deathstroke showing up. And I'm just more excited for Deathstroke.
You know, I have faith in Affleck's directing ability, seeing the movies that he has put out so far, well, that he's directed, Argo, of course, being like the big number one that he put out. However, he has not put out a fight sequence type of movie. I mean, The Town kind of got close, but not really. So here we have Batman, who's about to fight one-on-one with Deathstroke, and... You know, Ben Affleck just doesn't have that directing experience when it comes to a fight sequence like this. Whereas, I'm sure, you know, shooting the sniper scenes and whatnot with Deathstroke, because that's what he's really famous for, is camping out and shooting people, might not be a problem. But seeing the action, the fight sequences and stuff like that, it may prove a challenge for Ben Affleck. So, I mean, not just to direct, but also to act at the same time. So yeah, that'll be kind of interesting to see. However, Manganiello is huge. He's a monster. And we're talking about a guy who's like 6'4", 6'5". He's already ripped. I think he can pull the character off pretty good, as long as he can rein in the acting and actually control himself and show himself to be a composed, brooding killer. So, I mean, we shall see, but I think, honestly, they're trying to just catch up with, you know, Deadpool.
Yeah.
And with rumors of Taskmaster showing up in the Avengers film, you know, we'll see how that works out.
We'll see. Hey, if I get a broadsword and ballistic staff along with sniper rifle, I'm okay. So, what have you got, AJ?
Well, some sad news, but not really surprising. Watchmen, V for Vendetta, From Hell, Batman the Killing Joke, and The League of Extraordinary Gentlemen creator Alan Moore has officially announced his retirement from comics. Oh, Alan Moore. Your mind left a long time ago. Your body's just trying to catch up. Speaking with The Guardian during press for his upcoming novel, Jerusalem, Moore said he has about 250 pages of comics left in him. He also revealed what his last works are. Quote, there are a couple of issues of Avatar press book that I am doing at the moment, part of an H.P. Lovecraft work I'll be working on recently. Me and Kevin O'Neill will be finishing Cinema Purgatorio, and we've got about one more book, a final book of The League of Extraordinary Gentlemen to complete. After that, although I may do the odd little comics piece at some point in the future, I'm pretty much done with comics. End quote. Moore has been discussing this exit for a while, and now seems ready to move on to other challenges. Quote, I think I've done enough for comics. I've done all that I can. I think that if I were to continue to work in comics, inevitably the ideas would suffer. Inevitably, you'd start to see me retread old ground, and I think both you and I probably deserve something better than that. End quote. Critics have labeled the English artist to be the best graphic novel writer in history and one of the most important British writers of the last 50 years. Now, if you listen to what he says in the quote, I think I have done enough for comics. So basically what he's saying is he's God's gift. And that comics will just have to go on without him. Oh, no. I'm a huge Alan Moore fan, just as much as everybody else. I enjoy his writing. And the further he slips into madness, the better his writing gets. So I'm fully expecting to see the one novel where he's sitting in an insane asylum dictating his words to somebody sitting on the outside of the door, recording everything. Fully want to see that series. But he's been kind of retired for years. I mean, he's so sporadic with his publishings and his work that we really don't get to see him that often. Not to mention, we're talking about a man who hasn't done a convention in decades. You know, because he hates us, the comic book fan, to begin with. So the fact that he's leaving comic books, I'm not really going to miss him all that much. You know?
Yeah, it's like he's left the fandom, he's left the world of comic books, and he's been sporadically dropping pieces back for people to... It's kind of like, okay, you know, I'm no longer in the woods, but every now and then I'll walk to the edge of the woods and drop scraps for the wild animals.
Right. It's...
So it's, you know, considering some of the things he's put out are utterly fantastic, it's a sad thing, but at the same time, he's been gone for a while.
Yeah, I'll be honest with you. When I read this story, I thought to myself, again? I thought he had already retired. Yeah. So, anyway, what else you got?
What I've got is news related to the Crow remake. Officially, Jason Momoa has been locked in to star as Eric Draven, which is interesting and cool and raises questions. And a director has been locked in, Corin Hardy. So, female lead, there's been rumors and reports, and Jessica Brown Finley is currently attached but not locked in. We finally have a start date for production. Officially, the remake is going to be moving forward, and they're going to start production coming January. That doesn't really mean much when you consider all the other projects that Momoa has on the horizon and all the other things he's set to film, you know, Aquaman, all that good stuff. So we don't really know when we're going to be seeing a finished product of this. But if they actually lock in a cast, if they actually start filming, we may actually get something in the next couple of years, which, as someone who loved the original story and loved the first film, it's sad, but it's exciting to see what kind of take we might actually get on it. And Jason Momoa is freaking huge. When I think of Eric Draven, I don't think of someone that big. But if he pulls off the character, if he does it justice, which he puts his heart and soul into everything he's done, or everything that I've seen him do, so it could be really, really great. I don't know. It's just exciting for me, and it makes me ramble.
I have a huge man crush on Jason Momoa. That's been no secret for years. I don't give a shit. I think he's going to kick it. He's going to just be awesome in it. And the fact that he posted a picture of him and J.O. Barr going over the character just gives me even more hope, you know? Good for him. He's been pursuing it for a long time. I think he can do it. I think he's got it. Yeah, he's a big, huge monster and intimidating, and But can you imagine him being, you know, Eric Draven coming out, beating the shit out of everybody? Just coming out of the shadows, you know? You see this dude with just a trench coat and the cry face makeup just floating down at you? I'm running, you know? So
that's very true. It's very true.
So good luck with all that, man. I said, I'm excited for it. Let's see it happen.
Hopefully they get under production and everything goes smoothly. What else have you got, AJ?
Well, in what has to be the most tabooest subject in the history of wrestling ever, German director Lexi Alexander has come on board to helm the biopic Crossface about late wrestling champ Chris Benoit. Based on Randazzo's book Ring of Hell, Benoit was a respected wrestler who murdered his wife and son before taking his own life in 2007. He was posthumously diagnosed with chronic traumatic encephalopathy. I ruined that pronunciation. CTE, a progressive degenerative disease caused by severe or repeated blows to the head. The topic was recently tackled in last year's Will Smith-led Concussion. Alexander will direct from a script by Jake Goldberger and Sarah Coulter, while Alex A. Ginsberg and Tony Lee will produce. Now, I am a huge, huge Benoit fan. When I was growing up and watching him wrestle, all I thought of when I saw him was Wolverine. I thought this guy was short, stocky, and savage. And that's what he represented in the ring. When he did what he did, when he killed his children and his wife and then shot himself in the head, it came out of nowhere. Nobody was expecting it. Nobody knew what to do about it. But the WWE took the tragedy, paid the respects to him on Raw, found out what he did, that he had actually done all this crazy stuff, and immediately pulled Chris Benoit's name from anything whatsoever having to do with the WWF or any of its affiliates. Which means, like, they distanced themselves as far away from him as they possibly could. Even to the point of where when they mentioned past wrestling champions, heavyweight champions or whatever, his name is left off. And it's just a blank space there. Yeah, what he did was horrible and messed up and terrible. But this is going to show us why. This is going to show us what happened behind the scenes and in the mind, as damaged as it is with Chris Benoit. And it's something that I've been curious about myself, just seeing and whatnot. Because like I said, I grew up with the man. I cheered for him every time he won. He was just amazing to me until that happened. So hopefully this, you know, pays him some sort of respect or gives us answers.
And you're right. It was completely out of left field when that happened. I remember Chris Benoit myself. And it's like all the interviews, all the press, all the wrestling news and gossip about him, you never got even the slightest inkling that that kind of behavior was anywhere inside that man. Nowhere. And it was a tragedy. So some kind of understanding, some kind of explanation would... I think it's justified. I think it's worthwhile and worth the time.
Yeah, it'll be... I don't know, it's... When he won the championship, and him and Eddie Guerrero and the rest of the Radicals came out there, him and Dean Malenko and Perry Saturn and all of them, they came out there and they were hugging and whatnot. I was so happy for him. I was so just cheering for him and pulling for him. And then just suddenly out of nowhere, he decides to pull this. It was just harsh. You know, it was like growing up and hearing about Kurt Cobain. You know, it's just... Wow. So hopefully seeing this, we'll be able to shine some light on the subject. So yeah. Anthony, what else you got?
What I've got is one last little tidbit that came out of Sony's PlayStation meeting announcement. Everybody knows about the PS4 Pro and PS4 Slim and all that good stuff. There's one little thing that people may have overlooked in all of this. PS4 Pro isn't going to come with a 4K Blu-ray player. It's going to come with the exact same Blu-ray drive that the original PS4 came with. So no 4K Blu-ray support coming in, but the PS4 Pro will support 4K media and streaming. So the video processor is going to handle it, but the optical drive isn't going to be there.
Which doesn't make any sense to me because that's what they're supposed to do for the new 4K video games.
Exactly. So what are you? So what you're telling me is you're going to be building a 4K video game, but essentially what you're going to do is release it in HD instead of Ultra HD, and I'm going to have to download a 4K patch in order to get it to display 4K media.
And how big is that file going to be?
Yeah, as if I'm not already losing enough hard disk space when I load my games. I mean, really. I would think, especially when you're talking with the price points that they are for the PS4 Pro and whatnot, that you would bump up the Blu-ray player to a 4K, but Sony's not going that route for some reason. And that wraps us up for news this time around. We will be back with our review of Kingsglaive after this break.
Happy llama, sad llama, mentally disturbed llama, super llama, drama llama, big fat mama llama.
Happy llama. Hi, this is Joey Labartnick, and you can check out my latest comic, A Man Called Kraken, at comixology.com, and be sure to keep checking the Forbidden Panel website, because you're going to be able to see my artwork in the upcoming Volume 2 of Forbidden Tales.
And we're back, everybody. Okay, it is time for our review segment, and we're going to be talking about Kingsglaive, Final Fantasy XV. I'll let AJ get things started on this one.
All right, so for those that don't know, Final Fantasy is this huge, long, epic game series that's been out since forever. Turn-based playing games that came out, you know, you go on adventures and whatnot. To me, it was topped by Final Fantasy VII. After that game, nothing else really mattered. But I'm still a fan of, you know, the summons and the characters in the game and the stories and whatnot. So going in to watch the movie, I was very excited. 20 minutes later, I said, fuck this, and walked away. That's all I could do. I couldn't get past 20 minutes of the movie. Anthony, why don't you?
I, on the other hand, did get all the way through this. Okay. Just let me lay this out there. I am a lifelong Final Fantasy fan. I have been playing the game since the original NES. I even went so far as to find an emulator to find the original Japanese versions of Final Fantasy 1 and 2, because the first one released here was actually Final Fantasy 3. I happen to agree with AJ that the high point in the Final Fantasy series came at Final Fantasy 7. But that my love for the series has kept me playing these games and watching the movies linked to these games all my life. So I gave this one a shot. Even when, after 20 minutes, it made no dang sense, I kept watching. I watched with the hope that by the time things finished up, I might have some idea as to what the ever-loving hell they were trying to do. Is there a story? Yes. Are there characters? Absolutely. Does any of it link together and make any kind of sense? No.
See, and I'm glad to hear that, because I swear, I thought I was just alone. I thought maybe, I was like, you know what? Maybe I haven't seen anime in a long time. Maybe I've lost my patience for it. Maybe I'm just, you know, maybe I just, because I haven't played any of the games in a while, again, maybe I've lost my patience, my taste for it. I don't know. But to hear you say the same thing just makes me believe that. So the movie starts off with some really amazing action. A great battle's going on. You have some epic graphics, some just amazing stuff, and you're left with this hope that the rest of the movie will be that awesome. And then afterwards, you're like, what happened? What? Who are these people? What's this? Where did they come from? Why are we over here? What's happening with this? What the hell?
I can say they went above and beyond as far as the CG goes. It was absolutely freaking gorgeous. It really was. And that quality was throughout the entire film. That's my upside. That's the only upside I've got. I'm hopeful because I guarantee you I will buy Final Fantasy XV. I will play Final Fantasy XV. I'm holding on to a small kernel of hope that once I've played Final Fantasy XV, the story for this might make some kind of sense. Am I willing to subject myself to the nearly 2 hours of this again after having played Final Fantasy XV to see if it makes sense? I'm not real certain.
Well, see, that's the thing. The
answer is probably no.
The movie is a prequel to the game.
I think so.
So this movie is supposed to take you to the point of where the game begins. When you're doing that, it makes me not want to play the game because you're stupid.
Yeah, I've had trouble with Final Fantasy stories for a little while now. They've made little to no sense for about 5 to 6 years. Since Final Fantasy XI, they haven't really made any sense. They just kind of piece it together. It's like, oh, we slap Final Fantasy on the cover, people will still buy it. But, I mean, what the hell? Final Fantasy movie. We had Advent Children.
Beautiful.
That was awesome.
Beautiful movie. And it was easy to follow. You gave a shit. You know, it was exciting to watch.
You never had to have played Final Fantasy VII to love Advent Children. I know people that saw Advent Children, absolutely loved it, and didn't realize that Final Fantasy VII was the name of the game. They had never played a Final Fantasy game in their lives, but they thought the movie was one of the best anime films they'd ever seen.
The Final Fantasy movie that came out before that, I can't remember.
It was just Final Fantasy.
Yeah, just Final Fantasy. That movie was gorgeous, and it made sense, and it came with an awesome thriller dance number at the end.
You have the people who wrote the story for the game. This worries me. If this movie is intended as a prequel to the game, as a primer for the world and a background for some of the characters you're going to be seeing and all of those things, it terrifies me at how empty and pointless that story is going to be. It's like, okay, you've essentially shown me a world in chaos. Well, that's Final Fantasy game, so I expected that. You've shown me that there are warring factions. Oh, it's a Final Fantasy game. I expected that. You've shown me that there's magic in technology. Well, that's been the way of things for a good long while now in Final Fantasy games. You've given me two completely flat and pointless characters as the backbone of the game that's supposed to be coming out. It's like I can already see that the focal character and his ragtag band of companions are going to be driving towards this goal. If I see that now, without ever having played the game, and I see it's going to be empty and pointless and a completely meaningless story, it makes me not want to play at all.
When your top billed voice actor in the movie is Aaron Paul.
Who?
Exactly. Jesse Pinkman from Breaking Bad, that was his biggest role. Anyway.
Man, you tell me Jesse and I know who he is.
Sean Bean was in the movie. You wouldn't be able to tell.
I recognize the voice.
I'm guessing he probably died at some point.
No, he didn't. He lived.
No. Lena Headey was in the movie. She plays Cersei Lannister on Game of Thrones. But none of them got top billing. Who got top billing? Aaron Paul. Now, I'm not saying he's a bad actor or anything, but he obviously peaked in Breaking Bad. And to say that this is the name that's going to drag people over must be because they're showing Breaking Bad in Japan currently. Because otherwise, I mean, yeah. Disappointment doesn't begin to say how I felt about the movie. It was beautiful and gorgeous, and they spent so much time on the graphics and making everything look just beyond amazing. Which tells me that it would have been worth seeing it on IMAX. However, after watching 20 minutes of it, I would not have wanted to pay to see it in IMAX.
Seriously, the first five to 10 minutes, that opening action sequence, just freaking amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Then, wow, I think I spent a good half hour as it bounced around with characters after that, and I'm like, huh? You're like dropped into this world with no real background. Sure, you had voiceover narration, but that's, you're giving me ancient history. You're not giving me anything modern. And then it's like, okay, so he's friends with that guy, and he works for that guy, and this guy wants this to happen. But why does any of this matter? I spent at least a half hour doing that before I finally just turned my brain off and said, let me just ride this out.
Yeah, so anyway, like I said, it was a disappointment to the both of us. If you're going to watch this movie, I would recommend maybe playing it in the background while you've got something else going on, cleaning the house, vacuuming, anything. That's not going to leave you too disappointed when you miss out on things, because trust me, you'll feel like you've missed out on something regardless if you watched it or did miss out on it. So.
And my recommendation is, don't bother watching this until you have a copy of Final Fantasy XV in your hands. And if you start playing Final Fantasy XV and you go, I wonder what these things are that they're making reference to, then you might want to throw it on the side as you play, just so you can pick up the little tidbits here and there.
Yeah, so there you have it, people. Blah. Two thumbs down. Yeah, so we're going to go ahead and take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll be wrapping up the show. So be right back, guys.
Hi, this is Vanessa with Blackbird Bows, inviting you to visit my website at blackbirdbows.com, where you can find 100% original and customized bows for every occasion. That's blackbirdbows.com.
All right, everybody, we're back. And it is time again to wrap up another episode of the panel cast. Before we do that, AJ's got one last little tidbit to pass your way. AJ?
So I just want to let everybody know that next weekend, on the 17th, we will be doing another Create Something Day here at the Forbidden Panel Clubhouse. It's 15 hours this time, from 9 a.m. to midnight. We invite everybody to come on down, and I mean, this is just an opportunity to create something, to finish a project that you've always been wanting to work on, or just find a way to be creative of some way, shape, or form. Come down, work on a project. You can cook. We have a kitchen available. You can come down and rehearse some music. You can come down and finish your homework that you've been putting off for the longest time, write a project, draw, paint, break dance, learn to float, play card tricks, you know, whatever you want to do. We are there. We have the space available for that reason. We will have two live models posing for us for sketching or painting or what have you. And we'll also be doing a portfolio review if you're interested in possibly getting your book published or working with Forbidden Panel in some way, shape, or form. Or you just want tips on, you know, what you're drawing, what you're working on. If it's just something's just out of reach and you want to see if anybody can give you a hand, hey, we're there. So come on down and check it out. It's a lot of fun. We sit there, we watch movies all day, and we just function. And it's just a great environment to be in because everybody's creating and working on something. So, yeah, you know, come on down. Other than that, just want to remind you, please keep checking the website, checking our Facebooks. We've got a lot of great columnists on the site. Anthony just put out a new column. Our new writer, Jen Peters, she just put out a new column. Yeah, just come on by and let us know. Let us know what you think.
So remember, follow FP all over the interwebs, meaning the website, Instagram, Twitter, Tumblr, everywhere. Hit us up, let us hear from you, and that wraps things up for this episode of the panel cast. We'll be back with you in a couple of weeks.
Thanks, everybody. Bye.
Panelcast is brought to you by Forbidden Panel. Please visit us at www.forbiddenpanel.com.